So a good evening, everyone. We met here a year ago, and I have to admit that I thought a year ago that this year, as the year progressed, by the time we get to Pesach, we're going to say Hallel with a great, great enthusiasm, as Corona's going to be way behind us. It's going to be one of the most joyous Pesachs ever. And lo and behold, we're still wearing masks, and we're still meeting on Zoom. And despite the fact that we've made great strides, I don't think we're at yet that description. But I had no problem saying Hallel on Rosh Chodesh Nisan 2 days ago, because Hallel is, in my opinion, the most vivid and I would say appropriate prayer in this situation. 1 minute we're saying Hodu LaHashem Ki Tov Ki Lo Olam Chasdo. We have vaccinations. Thank God we can have weddings again. We can be in shuls again. We can be within buildings again. And a second later, we say, Min ha-meitzar karati ya anani b'merchav ya. 1 minute, we say, Zeh ha-yom asah Hashem nagila v'nismechavo. And within seconds, we say, Ana Hashem oshiana. So I believe that's the experience of Pesach this year. It's a combination between all that we've achieved, and thank God we're in a better place than last year. I mean, the very fact that we can daven in a minyan this evening means that the Zoom this year is in a better place than last year, where in this same situation, there were no minyanim happening. And on the other hand, we have a way to go, and we're not there yet. So I think that this particular Pesach, we have a lot to be thankful for, and yet a lot to daven for. And God willing, I hope the thanks will overcome the davening. B'mheira. Number two, it's a challenging year above and beyond the challenge of Corona in so many ways. We started the year by not blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah and not taking lulav and etrog on the first day of Sukkot. We progressed to Hanukkah, where for the first time I ever remember, Shabbos Hanukkah was on Parshat Vayeshev. We then had Asara B'Tevet on a Friday. We then progressed to having a Purim Meshulash in Yerushalayim, or a Friday Purim here in Efrat. And eventually now we're getting to the climax of this very complex year, and that is Erev Pesach Shechal Liyot B'Shabbat. The last time it happened, anyone can remind me, you can get off mute for this one. I think it was about 15 years ago or 10 years ago. Anyone remember? Well, suffice it to say, it's been a while. So therefore, I'm looking forward to your questions, but I thought I'll start by giving a background to the very unique year we're going into in terms of Erev Pesach, Shechal Liyot B'Shabbat, and I'm going to do it in chronological order. Namely, I'll start with the first thing and end with the last thing. Namely, I'll end with the Seder. So let's begin Thursday. Thursday morning before Pesach is Tanit Bechorot. So if you go to a Siyum every year, that's the day to make sure you go to one. There's a Machlokas this year, if it's a more lenient year or a more stringent year. Because on the one hand, it's what we call a Ta'anit Mugdam. We're pushing the fast from Shabbos to Thursday. So just like when we push Ta'anit Esther from Shabbos to Thursday, or we push off Tisha B'Av from Shabbos to Sunday, it usually is more lenient. So if you don't hear a Siyum every year, maybe this year for sure you can hear a Siyum. On the other hand, the reason that we're so makel on this fast is because that night is the Seder. We don't want people to be hungry and rush through it. This year there is no Seder. And therefore, some poskim say it's more stringent. Maybe you shouldn't use a Siyum this year to get out of the fast. Lahalacha, I believe that this year is more lenient, because that's the way we paskin on Tanit Esther and Tisha B'Av, and this is really just a minhag. Not to mention the fact that I have doubts that that Thursday we won't need to be up and awake and ready to go. Even though there's no Seder, there's a lot of cleaning to do, and there's a lot to do that day, so I think that at least your wives, and if you're on this, then your husbands, want you to be alert, awake, and not dehydrated and in bed. So therefore, this year, for sure, you can hear a Siyum, but the Siyum is on Thursday morning, not Friday, but Thursday morning. Thursday evening is Bedikat Chametz with a bracha. That Bedikat Chametz is like every year, just a day earlier. You make a bracha, you say Kol Chamira V'Chamira, like you do every year, but Thursday night. That Thursday night, something happens in Israel that I am very upset about. Watch my words very carefully. That is the night that Israel has decided to change the clocks to daylight saving time. I think that is an outrage on the highest order that in a Jewish country there's changing the clocks 2 days before the Seder. They could have waited a week. But that means that evening is a bit shorter. So remember that as you plan out that evening. So, just to reiterate, Thursday morning, Tanit Bechorot. Thursday night, Bedikat Chametz, like every year, with a bracha and Kol Chamira. Thursday night, we change the clocks. Friday morning, you burn the Chametz at exactly the same time you burn it as if it was Erev Pesach. For various reasons, that's what we do. So you burn the Chametz. However, you don't say anything when you burn the Chametz. So don't say what it says in the Haggadah. Don't say the Yehi Ratzon, the Kol Chamira. Nothing is said. Just the burning of the Chametz takes place on Friday morning. Friday should be the day that beyond the preparations for Shabbos and for Yontif, two more things should happen. Number one, all your Chametz should be tended to, as if that Friday night is Pesach. Namely, you have to obviously burn some of the Chametz. If you're selling Chametz, make sure it was taken care of. You nominated someone to sell it on your behalf. That Friday, you also have to make sure that if you are going to put away Chametz that you sold to a non-Jew, it's put away in a place that's dedicated to him. In other words, the only exception to the rule, as if it's not Erev Pesach, is going to be that you're going to maybe leave a little Chametz for Shabbos. And when I say a little Chametz, it's just for the sake of Lechem Mishneh. So that Friday, once again, you burn your Chametz at the same time like every year. You make sure to get rid of the Chametz like you do every year, with one exception. We don't say anything when we burn the Chametz, and we leave Lechem Mishneh. And now, we get to the second thing you should be doing that Friday, and that is the preparations for the Seder. First of all, practical. The Seder is Motzei Shabbos. I believe Shabbos ends around 7:30. I'm sorry. Shabbos ends at 7:30 or around 7:32. So, as you know, it's going to be a bit of a late Seder. Not so late, but late. So therefore, you should prepare everything for the Seder on Friday. That's practical. Number two, if you don't like my practical advice, then Marty Halachik. This is for you, Marty. Marty's used to hearing me on Tisha B'Av. So Baruch Hashem, we're the same day of the week, but a much happier situation, Marty. You cannot, on Yontif, necessarily prepare all the things that you need for the Seder. You can't burn the shake bone unless you're going to eat it. And we don't eat it at the Seder because it looks like we're eating the Korban Pesach outside of the Old City walls. So you have to burn it on Friday and get it ready. You can't burn it on Motzei Shabbos unless you're going to eat it on Sunday. Number one. Number two, you probably can't grind the charoset too small. Number three, preparing the salt water is very problematic halachically, because salt water is not really a food. So I can go on and on with examples, but the bottom line is, anything you can prepare on Friday for the Seder should be prepared, both practical and out of halachic concerns of Yontif, that prevents us from preparing them on Motzei Shabbos. So it should be done on Friday as much as possible. So once again, Friday, burning the Chametz at the right time, leaving just Lechem Mishneh for Shabbos. The whole house should be kosher for Pesach, dishes-wise, food-wise, etc., and preparing everything you can for the Seder on Motzei Shabbos. Now we get to Friday night. So Shabbos begins. As I said, the house is already kosher for Pesach. The only exception to the rule that we haven't yet done for Pesach is what we call Bitul Chametz, namely the declaration we usually make when we burn the Chametz, and Lechem Mishneh. So let's start with the second example, because that's the one that concerns most of the booklets that you're going to see on this issue. Now, there are excellent booklets out there, some of them long, some of them short. You should get one just to go over everything I'm saying, because what I'm saying may not be as clear as in a booklet. But quite frankly, this is the main issue they're going to deal with, Lechem Mishneh on Shabbos. So we have an obligation to have two rolls on Shabbos, but this is going to be problematic if the house is kosher for Pesach. Let's add to it a monkey wrench that Friday night you can still eat Chametz, but Shabbos morning, the cutoff time for Chametz is rather early. It's around 10:10. So Lechem Mishneh on this Shabbos is a bit of a problem. Not to mention the fact that as we get to it, you'll see that even on Shabbos morning, it's going to be more problematic. But Friday night, you have basically four options. Number one, you can very carefully leave a little bread over to make hamotzi on, not on the table you're eating with your Pesach dishes, but rather move away from the table a bit, just a bit. Take into your hand a piece of bread that doesn't make crumbs. I suggested a lafa, because lafa does not make crumbs. Hamotzi lechem in haaretz, everyone eats kibetza, and then you go back to the table, moving your chair 5 steps in, and you eat the meal that's kosher for Pesach. That's option number one, Friday night. No problems with it, just move away from the table. Option number two is egg matzah. That is a very good option because you can eat it at the table. And it's not kosher for Pesach because we Ashkenazim don't even eat it on Pesach, and Sephardim for sure don't use it for the Seder even though they eat it on Pesach. So there's no problem eating it Friday night. Not to mention the fact that Friday night there's no Isser to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. It's not Erev Pesach in terms of that Isser. So from this perspective, it's scot-free. The only issue is some poskim say that the Isser to eat matzah starts Friday night. But that's not the way we poskim. So egg matzah would be good Friday night. The third and fourth options are rather problematic. One is to take your matzah and boil it. Put it into the chicken soup for a minute and take it out. I find that very problematic because I'm not so sure you can make a motzi on it. But Rav Ovadia has a very long tshuva where he suggests it. And the fourth option is to use a matzah that you baked specifically not for the mitzvah of the Seder. Which again, I don't know such matzahs, and maybe you don't even need that intent when you bake the shmura matzah. So those two options are there, but they're not that popular and they have problems. The two options are bread moving away from the table, and bread without crumbs, lafa or pita, or egg matzah. That's Friday night. Friday night, everyone will go to sleep because they'll probably be very tired from the preparations on Friday, and they'll sleep well. Shabbos morning, you have to make davening a bit earlier for the following reasons. And there's just one reason. That's Lechem Mishnah. We have to eat Lechem Mishnah on the second meal of Shabbos, and the cutoff time for eating chametz is around 10-something in the morning. So you have to make davening a bit earlier, and the Chazanim should go easy on us. From this perspective, The issue is going to be as follows. If you eat bread, like I said earlier, a lafa, it's fine as long as you finish eating it by 10, whatever the time is in the morning that you have to stop eating chametz. The problem with that is that many a people will not exactly be able to eat and then bench before the time that they have to stop eating chametz. And then we have a problem of benching rules. Because if you have a piece of bread on the table, you can always go back and eat it. So if you have a Shabbos meal that takes 5 hours, there's no problem. Because you can always eat the piece of bread. But here, you're literally disconnecting from the bread because you can't eat it. So maybe at that moment, you have to bench. So from this perspective, bread Shabbos morning is an option. But because you can't eat it by a certain time, you may have to bench the minute you stop eating it. And then the question is, but I still have my chulent and my kugel, and how am I going to eat those? Well, I'm going to make a bracha on each, and I could have eaten it at the meal. That's a little problem with the bread option. The cutoff point and benching. The egg matzah option has a bigger problem on Shabbos morning. It's kosher for Pesach. According to many poskim, you can eat it all day up until the 10th hour. But according to other poskim, it's kosher for Pesach and kosher for the Seder. And from this perspective, you wouldn't be able to eat it on Shabbos morning. If it's kosher for the Seder, you can't eat it Shabbos morning. So on that issue, some allow it, Rav Moshe Feinstein, amongst others. Others don't allow it. So from this perspective, that's the problem with egg matzah on Shabbos morning. The second problem with egg matzah on Shabbos morning is that maybe it's not matzah, but maybe it's chametz, because Ashkenazim don't eat it on Pesach. So if it's chametz, you have to, again, daven early and make sure to finish by the cutoff point. So that's problem number two with egg matzah. So either it's chametz or it's too much of a matzah. Those are the two problems with egg matzah on Shabbos morning. But it's another option. And I have to say that as we get closer to Pesach, this year, Erev Pesach Shechal Liot B'Shabbat, you have to compromise. There is no way in the world that you can latzeit yedei chovat kol hashitot. That's a very nice Ashkenazic way to rule your life up until Erev Pesach shechal liyot b'Shabbat. Then it has to stop for a day. Then it can, you can go back to doing it. So on the night of second night of Rosh Hashanah, should we make she'echiyanu, shouldn't we? We put a new fruit on the table, and we latzeit yedei chovat kol hashitot. If we have to make she'echiyanu, we did, and if we don't, we have the new fruit. That's a nice idea for the second night of Rosh Hashanah. It won't work on Erev Pesach shechal liyot b'Shabbat the minute you get to the morning. If you eat chametz, you have to stop at a certain point, and you have a bit of a benching problem if you go past that point. And you have to compromise. If you eat egg matzah, it may be matzah, and you can't eat an Erev Pesach. It may be chametz, and you have the same cutoff point problem. So the bottom line is, you have to choose one and go with it. So that's what you do Shabbos morning, either egg matzah or chametz, and make sure to finish by the time that's cut off for the chametz. That's what we do Shabbos morning. If you're a Sfaradi, you don't have to worry about the cutoff point with egg matzah. But if you're an Ashkenazi, then indeed, the cutoff point for chametz is the cutoff point for egg matzah. I'll say it differently. If you assume egg matzah is not matzah but chametz, you have to finish it by that time in the morning. So davening is earlier, the second meal is earlier, the lechem mishnah is earlier, and then we get to the cutoff point where we can't eat chametz. What do we do with our chametz on a regular year? At that point, we burn it. We can't do that on Shabbos, obviously. So whatever's left from that lafa or pita, what you can do with it is one of the following three ideas in descending order. Number one, you can very simply flush it down the toilet. That's one of the ways to get rid of chametz. The problem with that is that our toilets are not exactly made for bread. And therefore, you can indeed have a very big problem with using it afterwards if you don't make it very small. And making it very small is a problem of tochein on Shabbos. So you better check that with your plumber before you use that solution. That's number one. I remind everyone that it's a two-day yontif, Shabbos and Sunday. It's not like Motzei Shabbos, my plumber can come over. So that's solution number one. Solution number two is very simply throw a little Economica bleach on it, throw a little soap on it, put it in a bag, and throw it out in the garbage outside. By putting soap or Economica on it, you're posel it me'achilat ha-kelev. So therefore, even if the garbage is owned by the city of Efrat, and Efrat's Jewish, it's still not chametz. That's a problem on Pesach. So that's solution number two. I think that's a very good solution for any chametz left over. But don't leave bags and bags over. That was taken take care of on Friday. We're talking about one little bag of the crumbs left from those lechem mishneh we ate on Shabbos. That's solution number two. Solution number three is a great solution, and that is to make sure to finish it all up. That's the best solution of them all. The problem is we can't plan that because this guy's going to get up late, and this one doesn't like bread, and this one doesn't have an appetite. So that's what we do the minute that we finish the Shabbos meal on Shabbos morning. Any chametz left over, we get rid of within that hour. Now that we've done that, we have the challenge of Shabbos beyond Lechem Mishneh. So chametz is over. We're looking forward to days of matzah. But now we have to eat shalashudis. How do you eat shalashudis if you can't eat matzah as Erev Pesach? You can't eat chametz. The time has passed. Egg matzah may be chametz, so we can't eat it. Now we're going to add to it that the time of shalashudis is after Mincha Gedola. So therefore, we're talking about around 1:15 in the afternoon, and that's the time that many people go for a siesta, especially if you're going to wake up more early Shabbos morning. So we usually eat shalashudas later in the day, but there's a halacha on every Erev Shabbos and an Erev Pesach a bit earlier that you can't eat a big grain-based meal after Sha'a Asirit, namely a half an hour before Mincha Ketana. So you can't eat shalashudas at the normal time if you're going to use egg matzah or any grain-based product. So if egg matzah is chametz, for sure we're not eating it. But even if egg matzah is matzah, not kosher for the Seder, you can use it for shalashudas if it's later in the day. So if you're going to eat shalashudas at 1:15, that's fine. You can make sure to eat that egg matzah, as long as you don't consider it chametz, by the time that you're not allowed to eat grain-based products. But if you're going to eat shalashudas later in the day, then the only solution you have is to compromise on what you're going to eat. So you can't eat chametz, you can't eat matzah, you can't eat egg matzah. You'll have to eat shalashudas with meat, potatoes, fruit. Those are the ideas the Ramah gives. So compromise number one on shalashudas will be the menu or the time. We'll go with the Bahag at the time of shalashudas is earlier in the morning. You'll get up on the crack of dawn and you'll divide your morning meal into two. The first one will be the second meal. The second one will be the third meal, and all this before 10 o'clock in the morning. I doubt any of us can do that because we don't wake up that early, not to mention the fact that it sounds abnormal. And if it's abnormal, you're going to make brachot you don't need. You're going to divide the meal into two intentionally is a problem of brachot. So when it comes to shalashudas, you're either going to compromise on the time or the menu. That's the only solution for Erev Pesach, Shechali Yot B'Shabbat. So either you'll eat it in the morning before the time that you're not allowed to eat chametz, or you'll eat it in the afternoon, albeit not grain-based products, after the ninth hour of the day. So that's shalashudas. So once again, to reiterate, Friday night, Lechem Mishnah, either chametz carefully or egg matzah. Shabbos morning, either chametz carefully or egg matzah before the time that we have to get rid of chametz if you're Ashkenazi. Shalashudas, either chametz and egg matzah before the time, or later in the day without the above. Without the above. And just having everything else but bread. So that's shalashudas on this very unique Shabbos of next week. One thing that we all do on Erev Pesach, beyond getting rid of the chametz by eating it, is doing bitul chametz. That's the declaration we didn't make on Friday when we burnt the chametz. So at the right time, on Shabbos morning, once you've thrown out any chametz you have left or flushed it down the toilet, you say the kol chamira v'chamira that's written in the machzorim without the Yehi Ratzon. Without the Yehi Ratzon, because Yehi Ratzon would violate Shabbos by saying petitions on Shabbos. So, to reiterate what we said until now, Tanit Bechorot on Thursday, Bedikat Chametz Thursday night, Friday morning, burn the Chametz without saying anything. Friday night, Lechem Mishneh, either bread or egg matzah. Shabbos morning, the second meal is earlier. And right afterwards, we do bitul chametz after we get rid of the chametz. Shalashudas, you either compromise on the menu or you compromise on the time. Now, Shabbos afternoon, as I said, after the ninth hour of the day, you shouldn't eat too much so you, at the Seder, have a good appetite for the matzah. These times will be put out, so you don't have to remember them out loud, but the bottom line is, on Shabbos afternoons, we like to nosh, which is fine. But you can't nosh on anything that has matzah in it and is baked. So if it's knedelach, that's not baked, but boiled, that's fine. But if, up until the ninth hour of the day. But if it's baked like matzah roll, what's called matzah meal rolls, or even cakes made out of matzah meal, those should not be eaten on Erev Pesach in the morning until the Seder night. So you're going to try to stay on snacking. That's fruits, vegetables, meat, potatoes. Not to mention the fact that you can, of course, have the potato starch, cakes and cookies galore, and our favorite macaroons. All those are okay. But try not to stuff yourselves because you want an appetite for the Seder. Now, we get to the Seder night. Baruch Hashem, we got through this sophisticated Shabbos and we got to the Seder night. Motzei Shabbos, davening does not have to be after it says in the Luchot that Shabbos is over. Namely, Ma'ariv can start a bit earlier than that. About 18 minutes after Shkia is the time for Ma'ariv. And then, whenever Shabbos goes out, that's the time that you could say Baruch HaMavdil Ben Kodesh LeKodesh and start preparing for the Seder, which will include setting the table, warming up the food, lighting the candles in honor of Yontif. All that can't be done before Shabbos is out. But Ma'ariv can be done a bit earlier than that. So from this perspective, on Motzei Shabbos, I suggest that everyone in the house has a job. Namely, not just the women, but the men as well. Whenever Myriv is, you come home, everyone will have a job. This one will set the table, this one will warm up the food, this one will take care of the candles, so that the Seder can begin as soon as possible and make sure it's a beautiful one and not too late. So we'll sleep over Shabbos and we'll get ready for it in many different ways, by learning and by resting. But if Motzei Shabbos, all those preparations take a while, it's going to ruin your Seder. So I would suggest to give out jobs to everyone ahead of time as to who does what. And if you work together, hopefully it should be wonderful. That's Motzei Shabbos. Just a word about on Shabbos, it's a known law, but you can take a nap on Shabbos. If you have in mind, I'm going to take a good nap because I want to be up for the Seder. You just can't say it. Namely, don't say, I'm going to sleep now to prepare for my Seder on Motzei Shabbos. That's usher. But you could say, you can just do it without saying it. So don't talk too much. Do it. Okay? We have to act like the mafiosters. They don't talk too much because they're always wired and they're listening to every word they say. They just do what they need to do. That's what we need to do in terms of preparations for the Seder. So if you open up a Haggadah and you want to look for something nice to say at the Seder, that's wonderful. That's Talmud Torah. But if you actually say, I am learning this Shabbos like I've never done before, I never open a book on Shabbos, I'm only doing it because the Seder's Motzei Shabbos, that would be a problem of Achana Mikodesh Lechol. So Motzei Shabbos comes once again. Myriv can be 18 minutes after Shkia. The minute it says in the Luchot that Shabbos is over, Baruch HaMavdil Ben Kodesh LeKodesh, table can be set, food can be warmed, and candles can be lit. The final law is that at the Seder itself, we say in the Kiddush, in Kadesh, what we call Yak Nahas. Yayin, Borei Pri HaGafen, Kiddush, B'Kadesh Yisroel V'Azmanim. Then we have Ner, we take a candle and we say, Borei Ma'orei HaEsh. Then Havdalah, that's Hamavdil Ben Kodesh LeKodesh, and Shehechiyonu. That's the main difference at the Seder. Everything else is the same. There's a second difference, which is very minute, because this is a machlokes, and that is the end of Magid. Anyone know what the difference is at the end of Magid? The final bracha of Magid says, Benochal Sham. Anybody remember from last year? Min ha-psachim and min ha-zvachim, Kevin, yes. The problem is, we usually have zvachim before psachim because we ate the korban chagiga that we brought before the korban Pesach, before the korban Pesach. But if erev Pesach chal liyot b'Shabbat, you couldn't bring the korban chagiga, you can only bring the korban Pesach. So maybe we should say min ha-psachim or min ha-zvachim. In some Haggadahs they say that. Other Haggadahs say that's absolutely wrong. Because we're not talking about this year, we're talking about next year. And next year won't be Erev Pesach, Shechal Liyot B'Shabbat. So therefore, you should say it in the order that every year it says. But that's a small difference, it's not Ma'akev. So, those are the basic... Someone's not on mute. Okay. Those are the basic differences for this year. And that's basically how this unique year will play out, as I said. Nothing is perfect on that Shabbos. We have to compromise and go with one Shita. It's impossible to fulfill them all. And any Shita is legitimate. And Be'ezrat Hashem, I just want to say, before I take your questions, that I think it's a beautiful year, that we're able to have a beautiful day of rest before the Seder. That's very unique. And I think the Seder will be all the more nicer and restful because we had a Shabbos prior. That's all in terms of the basic background for this year. Looking forward to your questions on anything. Pesach, koshering dishes, cleaning the house too much, cleaning the windows, koshering the doorknobs. Go right ahead. Marty liked that last one. Okay.
What happens if somebody does say Kol Chamira on Friday morning after you burn your chametz? Is that... for your chametz, you cannot eat chametz until after Pesach?
Well, if you said it and you understood it, then I believe that's it. And you'll have to use egg matzah for on Shabbos, and that's the way it is. If, on the other hand, you said it and you had no idea what you're saying, then I don't believe it's chal any year, and especially not this year. Namely, If a person takes a Haggadah and just says, okay, I'll say these Hebrew words, that's not Bitul Chametz. Bitul Chametz has to be that I understand that I am mafkir it now and that it's like dust to me and I don't want it. If they didn't say it in English or in modern Hebrew, they said it in Aramaic and they had no idea what they're saying, then I don't believe it's Chal. But if they understood it and they did it, then they have no choice. That's it, as Marty said. They have to eat egg matzah on Shabbos and go with the shitas that say it's not matzah and it's not chametz. That's in terms of that.
Could the Rav address a little bit kidneyot on Shabbos Erev Pesach? And specifically, can I eat kidneyot? Can I cook a chillant without barley in my chametz stick crock pot on and eat it Shabbos morning?
Okay, first of all, I believe that you should not cook anything in your chametz stick pots for that Shabbos for the following reason: it's going to be a big problem to clean it. If you clean it, it's a chana mikodesh lechol. And I'm not so sure you'll be able to clean it in the way that it will take out all the chametz. So we're making, if we have no choice, to like put a little soap on it, just that we don't over and bal yira or bal yimatzeh. But I think it's a bad idea, not to mention very difficult to clean any chametz stick apakt. So that should not happen. However, kidneyot is not chametz. How do we know kidneyot is not chametz? Because our Sephardic brothers and sisters eat it with glee, and we envy them. And rightfully so, because the Gemara paskins that kidneyot is not chametz. There's an Amora in the Gemara that put kidneyot on his table on the Seder as one of the two tafshilim, one the Korban Chagiga, one Korban Pesach. He used rice. So obviously it's not chametz. Not to mention the fact that if you leave it in your house, in your cupboard, and don't sell it, there is no issue with it. There's no bal yira, bal yimatzeh. Not to mention the fact that if it fell into your chicken soup, it's batel berov. You don't even need shishim. So from this perspective, kidneyot is not chametz, and you can cook it in your Pesach tikka pots for Shabbos. So that's not an issue in terms of cooking it. Now, when can you eat it? That's the issue. So Friday night, no issue whatsoever to eat it. Shabbos morning, some say you have to finish it before the time of chametz. And others will say, well, it's not real chametz, you can eat it all day. I would suggest that if you don't eat kidneyot every year from the time that you can't eat chametz, this year should be no different. So you can dip whatever it is with in hummus up until the time that you can eat chametz. However, if you're going to leave that hummus in your house for Pesach, you can't dip the challah in there. So be very careful that you don't dip into that hummus things that you can't eat on Pesach. But if it's rice Friday night, no issue. And as I said, you can eat it and cook it in the chametz stick of pots without an issue. I'll just say on that I heard from Rabbi Beagle, who's the chief rabbi of Meitar and gives a lot of kashrus supervision in Israel. He told me, all I know is to be a rabbi. I did the smicha tests like you. I don't know politics. He doesn't. And all he knows is halacha. So he once on Chol HaMoed went on a tiyul with his friends. And the night before, they slept in Yerushalayim, so they can have an early start. So he slept at a Sephardi's house, and the Sephardic mother is cooking soup with rice. So he's all nervous. He calls Rav Avram Shapira like he's about to eat chazir. And Rav Avram Shapira almost threw him off the phone saying, and I quote, "Ma baya? Tochal et hamarak v'tashil et ha'oros." Namely, in the bowl itself, you can eat the soup and not eat the rice. So obviously, there's no issue with kidneyot in the Pesach tikka pots or plates. The issue is just till when can you eat it. And that's it. So either you eat it up until the time you can't eat chametz, or perhaps all day because it's not real chametz. That's in terms of kidneyot. By the way, I didn't mention this before, and I may mention it. One of the ways to do Lechem Mishneh, some suggested, is the Pesach rolls, if you heard of them. I find that solution very problematic because the Rama paskins that if you take matzah meal, matzah, and water, it may be kosher for the Seder. So if it's kosher for the Seder, you can't eat it on Erev Pesach. So I don't see the matzah meal rolls as a solution for Lechem Mishneh. But kidneyot, enjoy Friday night, and obviously Shabbos morning until the time of that you can't eat chametz for sure. There's no issue with that. Next question.
Bedika in shared spaces, offices and army. And if the Rav could address specifically in the case of army, assume the key, you know, the case of somebody in a new room with roommates, so there's not the the easy camaraderie. And sometimes if you've been with the same people for 3 years, you could say, listen, guys, could you just do me a favor and, you know, get rid of your chametz. But each, and specifically, each person has an aron, which is their own personal private area for storage of foods and things like that, that they have and that it's their private to them. Does one need to ask one's roommates to remove the chametz from their private areas?
Okay. So with regard to the any shared spaces, I'm going to divide between the two spaces you mentioned. Your own aron, your own locker, your own desk is your responsibility. You should do a bedikat chametz in there, getting rid of the chametz and checking on the night before. You're not going to see it. Namely, if it's that Thursday night, then with a bracha, prior without a bracha. But it should be at night. That's your space. Shared spaces with others, I don't believe that is your responsibility, especially in the army. It belongs to the army. It doesn't belong to the person. Now, it's true. And the reason I say this is because in the army, if you lose your shirt, you have to pay for it. But if it's a bed that was stolen from some room, it's not like it's a responsibility of that chayal. It's a responsibility of the army as a whole. And the army sells its chametz, so I'm not so sure that that's a problem. Not to mention the fact that if people bring in chametz to the room, you can't stop them. And the Gemara says explicitly, Shelcha iata ro'eh, you're responsible for your own, aval ata ro'eh shel achirim. You can see other people eating chametz if they choose to sin. So from that perspective, I don't think that the other spaces are your responsibility. But as Gerald, as you said, if they want to be a little more accommodating, I think it's a great idea.
Does the same thing go with the schools as well? For example, I have to take my chametz. The school sells the chametz. Sells the building itself, or sells whatever they sell the chametz in the building. But that means I could just leave it there and it's not mine, and I have to write it down that I have chametz. I have stuff that I'm going to leave there until after Pesach.
So I'll say it like this. The school cannot sell your chametz. Namely, even if the school says I sell all the chametz in the school, but it belongs to you, they can't sell it on your behalf necessarily, unless you say zachin lo la adam shelo befanav. There's a ksot acholshin that suggests that. So if it's yours, you have to get rid of what's yours. If it's the school's, namely the entity called the school, then the principal of the school will look after it. Same thing with a shul. A shul, obviously, unfortunately, we haven't been eating in shul, so I'm not so sure that we even have to check it for chametz this year. Namely, if there was no food brought into the shul from 30 days prior to Pesach, and beyond in this case, you don't have to check the shul for chametz this year. But if it's indeed a place that you brought chametz into, then it's the shul's responsibility, the gabbai, whoever it might be. It's not you personally. But if it's your chametz and your shtender, then the shul can't sell it. It's yours, and therefore you're going to be liable for it. So again, shared spaces, whatever is yours personally, you have to take care of it. If it belongs to the entity, you don't have to take care of it. No one's asking about dishwashers this year. Last year, that was the hottest topic.
If the Rav would remind us.
I think that since many people are home for Pesach, even this year, even if you were machmir on dishwashers in the past, I believe you should be mekel and kasha your dishwasher by making sure it's clean, including the drain, including the filter, any place that has holes that you can get to. B, putting it on for a run after waiting 24 hours, preferably with soap, and then you have it kosher for Pesach. There used to be an issue that the actual canister that we use for the silverware, some suggested you can't get into those holes, but today the holes are much bigger, so you can look at them. There's no chametz in them. So therefore, I think dishwashers could be koshered if indeed, again, You clean them out properly, you wait 24 hours, and you put it on for a run at the highest heat.
You should just be careful with the chametz.
Can one have a non-Jewish guest at a Seder? I know that the standard answer when I was growing up was Kol Orel Lo Yochal, but when it's absolutely Usser, I once heard Rav Blau give it to Bartor. I forget who he cited, but he cited a daya that the fifth kos of the Heveti was actually the kos that represented the Umos HaOlam, and therefore it would be appropriate.
Oh, nice. I like the Dvar Torah of Rabbi Blau. Very nice for the fifth cup. Very interesting. The issue is not the Seder. The issue is not Kol Arel Lo Yochal Bo. That's a halacha with regard to Korban Pesach. And we don't have, unfortunately, yet the Korban Pesach. The issue is every weekday yontif. If a yontif comes out on a weekday, Mida Oraisa, you cannot cook for a non-Jew, which just means don't cook for him. You'll give him the food you cooked anyway. Mida Rabbanan, they made a gzera not to even invite him over because you may cook for him. You may add food for him. Now, if that was the case and we ended it there, this is the Oraisa, this is the Rabbanan, there would never be a situation where a convert can see a Seder or a Sukkot meal or a Rosh Hashanah meal because we can't invite non-Jews. Shema Yarbe Bishvilo. So obviously, throughout the generations, there were many heterim written for those situations where you felt it was necessary to invite a non-Jew over. When I say necessary, I mean that if you want to show him what a yontif meal is, so wait till Shvi Shel Pesach. It comes out on Shabbos. There's no issue of cooking, and you can invite him. But if it's a Seder, and Seder's on a weekday this year, and it's necessary, convert. Not a convert, someone that you want to bring closer to Judaism for political reasons, security reasons, whatever it might be, there are a few solutions out there to overcome this issue. Because again, the issue is more derabanan. Because midoraisa, all you have to do is not cook for him, and that's it. Midorabanan, you can't even invite him over. So there's a few solutions. I would suggest that the most common solution is that you don't cook that yontif when he comes over. Namely, the food that you serve was already made before. So you warmed it up on the plata as if it's Shabbos. And that's one of the solutions that are given. In hotels, where obviously you can't check Jewishness at the door. After all, even in Israel, we got a problem checking Jewishness at the door. So in the hotels, for sure, they're not going to do that. The solution is that all food is cooked by non-Jews and not by Jews. That's not necessarily practical in our homes. When I say cooked by non-Jews, there's no Bishul Akum issue. They put on a pilot light or a Yahrzeit candle. But there are issues of getting non-Jews to do it. And we don't have non-Jews at our disposal in our homes. So that's not necessarily a practical solution. The practical solution, when necessary, is for that meal, do not cook anything. Namely, warm it up on a plata as if it's Shabbos. That's the most practical solution for that, and it should only be used when necessary. When necessary. For converts, it's necessary. I cannot envision a Beis Din converting a convert without them going through a Seder. It just doesn't happen, and it's not responsible for it to happen by a Beis Din. So therefore, in my opinion, that's when you utilize this heter, only when it's necessary. But again, I want to make it clear, it's not an issue by the Seder per se. It's any weekday yontif that you can cook on. Anyone.
You brought up a very interesting point about the Yahrzeit candle, of just lighting one before Shabbat. So I think maybe you did say I wasn't paying attention at the beginning, or I came in late and had a problem with my phone. But to light it for before Shabbat, so you could use it multi-Shabbat to light the candles.
So I didn't say that. I'll tell you why I didn't say it. First of all, Marty, thank you for reminding me. Whoever lights candles on Yontif, namely Motzei Shabbos, should make sure to light a Yahrzeit candle for 48 hours on Friday, so that on Motzei Shabbos, the Yahrzeit candle's there, and they can light from it by transferring fire to your candles. I'll tell you why I didn't mention it. Because I don't like to butt into women's mitzvot. I think when rabbis butt into women's mitzvot, males butt in general to women's mitzvot, it only does harm. And I'll tell you why. Because
I apologize, I have to break in. For everybody who's on the this call. I'm swearing all to secrecy over the use of the term male rabbis and the implications.
We have to have some fun this evening, Gerald. Gentlemen and any ladies on the phone, the bottom line is that the mitzvah of lighting candles is usually harmless because we do it on Friday or we do it Erev Yontif. The minute it comes out on a Motzei Shabbos, that's a Yontif, in my opinion, men should stay out of this issue because they're going to find issues. The issues is going to be, what's the heter to light candles? The bottom line is, you can transfer fire to cook. You can transfer fire for things you need. What's the need to have candles? You have electricity in the house. Or I'll say it another way. Even if you had candles, lighting in the house, you would still call or ask a rabbi, can I call a non-Jew to put up my fuse that went off because I need the electricity? So what's the heter to light candles? That's what the Mishnah calls ner shel batala, lighting candles for kicks. You know, you're bored on Yontif, let's light a candle. So it's a bit problematic to light candles on Motzei Shabbos. Now, I say males should not butt in because I told this whole lumdus to my wife and I didn't convince her. So I doubt I'm going to convince anyone else. The bottom line is it's not going to work. But that's in terms of lighting candles. So if you light candles on a second night Yontif, for example, you can light, obviously, on Motzei Shabbos by transferring fire from a Yortzeit candle. Having said that, many have said, including Rav Asher Weiss and others, that it is a tzorech because you like to eat a Yontif meal with candles. So it is a tzorech, not any less than, Marty, the real Yortzeit candle. Many people light a Yortzeit candle when they say Yisker. Is that a tzorech? It's not a tzorech for light, it's a tzorech nafshi. It's a tzorech that the day I say Yisker, I have a Yortzeit candle lighting. And many poskim say, that's fine, you can do it on Yontif as long as you have a need. And from this perspective, many have allowed it. So therefore I said, I don't want to butt in, this is a women's mitzvah. Women should be the one that go ahead and poskin on lighting candles. But quite frankly, that's probably why I forgot to mention the Yortzeit candle. But the Yortzeit candle is very good for cooking on Yontif too, so it's important to have it for cooking per se. If you want to cook, say, even Motzei Shabbos if you have the time, but definitely Sunday if you want to make a barbecue or whatnot, it's important to have a Yortzeit candle so you can transfer fire. I'm not even going to talk about the Shehecheyanu because that's really butting in.
When do we say Shira is said this year, the first day of Pesach?
Last day. For us, last day. Shvi Shel Pesach. We always say it on Shabbos. All the Megillahs are read on Shabbos for reasons I never understood, except for Rut. So therefore, Shir HaShirim is read on Shvi Shel Pesach this year, the last day of Pesach. I find it problematic for me, personally, because I think Shir HaShirim is beautiful. I try to keep the minhag to say it after the Seder, because I really think it's one of the most beautiful Megillahs that we have. And it's too bad. We have to wait till Shvi Shel Pesach to read it. But no, it's not read on the first day. It's read on the last day, on Shabbos. First day Yontif, davening this year is a regular davening. There's no difference. Motzei Shabbos, we do say Vatodienu, the Havdalah, that we say when a Shabbos is going into a Yontif. That's the only difference in davening per se, but everything else should be the same. If we daven in a minyan this year, last year I said that you shouldn't say Hallel in davening if you daven alone, but this year I'm going to say that if you daven in a minyan and your minhag is to say Hallel like most people in Israel, then you should say Hallel even if you're davening outside or whatnot. I believe that in a minyan, then it's okay to say Hallel on Motzei Shabbos. I'll also add it gives a bit more time for people at home to get the Seder ready. In terms of, someone just wrote to me, in terms of things in the house that you have to clean out from chametz, I just want to make it very clear, as I do every year, and it doesn't help me either, just like with the candles. There's a big difference between Pesach cleaning and spring cleaning, and as much as I talk about it, it doesn't help. But the bottom line is, if you're asking halachically, how do I clean out my refrigerator, my cabinets, and whatnot, You have to basically take the chametz out of there and make sure there's no chametz left. Namely, you look at it and it looks clean. You want to be very machmir. You'll take a sponge and go over it to take any crumbs you didn't see. And that's all you need to do for anything that you're not going to cook in. The minute you get to cooking and warming up, that's where kashering kalim comes in. But there is no reason whatsoever to go ahead and to take the refrigerator apart totally and to put everything in bleach and every other chomer out there and to get your hands all burnt. There's no cooking being done in the refrigerator. You have to remove the chametz, remove the crumbs, and that's it. The halacha is you have to go ahead and remove the chametz in such a way that you won't come and eat it on Pesach. Now, what does that mean? That means that if I have a desk that I eat on, I look at it and make sure there's no chametz. But I don't have to remove the desk to go behind it, because there's no way in the world that on Pesach I'm going behind the desk to eat. Or I'm not going under the cabinets to eat. So there's no reason to clean under there. That's covered with the bitul chametz. The places you have to clean are places that with your eyes, there's chametz and you may eat it. Number two, the chametz has to be edible to eat. Namely, we're machmir on Pesach, pasul la'achilat ha-kelef. Okay? If it's so disgusting, behind the cabinet there's a crumb, I'll say it in my language. I learned this from Rabbi Moshe Weinberg of Woodmere. No self-righteous mouse would even eat that stuff. And therefore, I don't think we have to remove cabinets in such a way to go behind it to look for chametz. If you go in there with chametz, you have to clean it. If you eat in your car, you have to clean your car in the places that you bring chametz into. On the other hand, the beds are always in the same place. I eat on my bed. I don't have to take my beds out of the room to clean under it. I hope I made that clear. There was a question here. Clean my glass top kitchen table. Once again, same idea. You just clean it off from the chametz. Remove the chametz. Make sure there's no crumbs left. If you want to be machmir, put a little spray on it and clean it off. That's all you need to do. There's nothing more you need to do. However, if you're going to put hot dishes on glass, then we get into the machlokes of, is glass boleya or not? If it's not boleya, what I just said is good enough. That's many Sephardim do even with their glass dishes in the house. If it is boleya, we kosher, they're like kli cheres, then you can kosher it. You cover it for Pesach with a Pesach tablecloth, and that's good enough. That's only if you put hot dishes on it. If you don't put hot stuff on it, everything I said earlier. The minute you put hot stuff on it, that's where koshering comes into the picture. So refrigerator, freezer, cabinets, beds, car, any place you don't cook and put hot stuff, what I just said goes. The minute it becomes something with heat, that's where the sophistication of koshering kalim begins. Okay, so very, very simply, I will say that every year, Gerald, before Pesach, I do a survey of the questions I'm asked. 80% are about toiletries. It's amazing. It's only 20% about everything else we talked about here. And this year's no exception. 80% was, do I have to buy kosher for Pesach furniture polish? That's 80% of the questions. So let's go over it very simply. Divide all the toiletries, medicines in the world, anything that's not food, into three categories. And these are the three categories you have to remember. Category number one is things you don't put into the mouth. From furniture polish to detergent, to colognes, to perfumes, anything that doesn't go into your mouth does not need to be kosher for Pesach. If it says kosher for Pesach, it's a different religion. It's from our brothers and sisters of a different religion that use the words kosher for Pesach. Nothing to do with Judaism. And I say this with the greatest respect for all kashrus organizations. No one, I repeat, no one is going to tell you that any product that you don't put into your mouth needs a kashrus in general and for Pesach. So that's category number one. So
yeah,
if you
apologize for breaking it, but even if like my shampoo says wheat germ in it.
No problem. No issue. It's pasul la'achilat ha-kelev. You don't put it into your mouth. There's no issue. Category number two.
Yeah, I'm sorry to break it also. Even though the paper towels and the toilet paper that says kosher the Pesach.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, I'll explain the paper towels, but that's issue number two. So the second category is if you put it into your mouth or it touches food that goes into your mouth. So shampoo, cologne is not touching food. Therefore, I said nothing to do. But if it goes into your mouth, toothpaste, mouthwash, lipstick, you mentioned paper towels, which I think is hilarious, but I can begin to say, all right, the food may touch, you make schnitzel. Matzah meal schnitzel, okay, non-gebrachs, potato starch schnitzel, and you put it on the paper towels to take off the oil. Then maybe it goes into your mouth. There's one minority view of the Chabad Dat quoted in Hilchos Pesach and in Yoredeya Hilchos Kashrus that says that if you take something that's pasul la'achilat hakelef and you put it into your mouth, it's achshevei, atam machshivoto. You now made it food again. And therefore it needs a kashrus for Pesach. Namely, it's disgusting, it's repulsive, but you put it into your mouth, that's it, you need a kashrus for Pesach. So toothpaste, mouthwash, lipstick, those things, based on the chavos das, needs a kashrus for Pesach because you put it into your mouth. Medicine that you swallow that tastes disgusting, it's disgusting and bitter, you need a kashrus because you put it into your mouth. But let's put things into perspective. That's one minority view. The majority point of view is, if it's pasul la'achilat hakelev, even if you put it into your mouth, you don't need a kashrus for Pesach. Okay? Therefore, toothpaste does not need, mouthwash doesn't need, lipstick doesn't need, your paper towels for sure don't need, and even if it goes into your mouth, if it's not food, doesn't taste good, you don't need kashrus. I'll illustrate it with my favorite Rav Soloveitchik story of history. He once gave a shiur and said exactly what I just said, or I said what he said, to be precise. So one guy in the class was a knacker. You always have one of those shmendricks. He decided he's going to go home. He's going to show Rav Soloveitchik. So he took toothpaste, Colgate. He put it in front of his dog. And by golly, the dog ate it. So he comes into shiur the next day. He says, Rav Soloveitchik, last night I gave my dog the toothpaste and he ate it. So it's actually ra'oi la'achilat hakelev. And Rav Soloveitchik, without batting an eyelash, looked at him and said, and who are you going to believe, me or your dog? Now, what did he mean by that? He meant that it's not like halacha says you need to ask a dog. It means it's repulsive. It's so repulsive that even a dog, a normal dog, wouldn't eat it. No one is about to eat a plate full of medicines that you swallow. And therefore, the majority point of view is you don't need a hechsher on those things. I personally do not look for hechshers on mouthwash, toothpaste, lipstick, or anything I put into my mouth that's not food. The third category is food. Food needs a hechsher for Pesach. Good tasting medicine needs a hechsher all year and for Pesach. But if it's not good tasting, even though you swallow it, does not need a hechsher for Pesach. So to illustrate, a good tasting syrup that you give your kids when they're sick because they refuse to take any medicine that tastes disgusting needs a hechsher all year. It needs a hechsher for Pesach. You probably make a shahakol before drinking it. But a pill that you swallow, you do not need a hechsher for, in my opinion, unless you want to be choshesh for this chavol dat, which is one minority view. But for sure, anything you don't put into your mouth, you do not need a hechsher for, even if it says it's made out of wheat with the idea of getting the Jews on Pesach. If it goes onto your hair, it goes onto your body, it goes onto your shelves, it does not need a hechsher for Pesach. The only problem begins if it goes into your mouth, and that's a minority view. Real food needs a hechsher for Pesach. Only real food. And good tasting medicine. Children's toothpaste, I was just asked. I think it's good tasting, and therefore it does need a hechsher all year. It needs a hechsher for Pesach. But on the other hand, toothpaste for adults that you spit out, or mouthwash for adults, I don't think needs a hechsher for Pesach. And you shouldn't go crazy looking for it. Someone called me today, again and again and again and again, that's exactly their question. They were going up and down the aisles, they couldn't find a mouthwash that was kosher for Pesach. So again, it's one chavod dat, I don't think we need to be choshesh for it. Rav Soloveitchik for sure wasn't, and many others, Rav Poskim. If you want to, I can understand. But it's definitely not lahalacha. Lahalacha is food and good tasting medicines you put into your mouth. So, that means, Marty, that when you get those lists from the Kupat Cholim with the medicines, okay? Any pill, just disregard. Just disregard. That's a chavod dat, it's disregard. Your issue should be syrups and things that taste good. Those things need a hechsher all year, as I said, and for Pesach. And many of them do contain chametz, so you got to be careful. But if it's something you swallow and it doesn't taste good at all, you don't need a hechsher for Pesach, and you can, of course, take it on Pesach.
Liftit. Liftit, thank you.
Okay, so I didn't know the term in English. I'll tell you the deal. The deal is very, very simple. When you come to Kitniot, there's two schools of thought. We'll call it the Rav Frank school of thought and the Rav Moshe Feinstein school of thought. Rav Frank believed that if it talks like Kitniot, it looks like Kitniot, it's Kitniot. So even if it wasn't around when they made the Gezerah, it's Kitniot. So peanuts were not around, but it's Kitniot because it looks like Kitniot, it tastes like Kitniot, it's Kitniot. That's Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Rav Moshe Feinstein heavily disagreed. He said Kitniot's a minhag. A minhag is mashin nahagu. It's not a halachic category, it's what the Jewish people did. So at the time they made the Gzera of Kitniot, there was no, what did you call it in English, liftit? There was a word you used?
I'm not sure that it's the correct word, but I think it's lecithin.
Okay. So for many years, liftit was not edible, so they couldn't have made a gzera on it. Years and years ago, they made it edible. So now they have it in various products. Canola oil is made from liftit. So Rav Moshe Feinstein would say, was it around then? It's not part of the gzera, and you can use it. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank would say, it doesn't make a difference. It looks like kitniot. It tastes like kitniot. It's kitniot. I personally believe that on Kitniot, we should be as mekel as possible. And therefore, on this issue, I believe that Rav Moshe Feinstein is the way to go, because Kitniot is so far-fetched from chametz that I fulfill the minhag of the Ashkenazi communities and don't add to it. And that's what I think the gisha should be with regard to Kitniot. Now I'm going to add a monkey wrench to it. As I said earlier, even if kitniot fell into your chicken soup, it's butel berov. You don't even need shishim. So from this perspective, I find it scandalous that in Israel, if they put in a drop of kitniot in some pudding or some ma'adan, they say kitniot. The bottom line is it's butel berov. So therefore, what it should say is mechil me'at kitniot, which means maybe I don't want any kitniot in my body, so I don't want to eat it. But it's not usser even for Ashkenazim if it's in there, especially if it was made before Pesach. And therefore, I believe that on Kitniot, we should follow the minhag of the Ashkenazic communities and not add to it. So liftit was much later. Kinwa as well. Same machlokis, by the way. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Frank. And I don't believe we should add to it any more than we need to. Because quite frankly, I have seen many a Jews that dread going to the supermarket on Chol HaMoed Pesach. Not because it's instead of a tiul, because they go and they see that every other product is kitniot. And they look at it and they say, how in God's name is this margarine kitniot? How is this chocolate pudding kitniot? And they make a mockery, and rightfully so, out of a minhag of Am Yisrael midorei dorot not to eat kitniot, because it is a mockery. And therefore, I believe we should not add to it. It really hurts our Simchas Yom Tov. Rice, no. Beans, no. But the bottom line is we don't have to add to it.
Corn.
We should leave it the way it was. Corn, somehow, iskitniot, maybe it wasn't around, but somehow that was accepted, okay. We don't have to add above and beyond it. By the way, when someone just asked me on WhatsApp, when you buy matzah, that's where you should be careful. I have to say, 80% of the questions are, does bleach need a kashrus for Pesach? Or my favorite, does tissues need a kashrus for Pesach? I think I told the story about the gloves. Didn't tell the story about, Corona, we have to tell this story. Many people like to use gloves, okay? These two eyes saw gloves. Kasher la'ochlei kitniot. I mentioned Rav Beagle.
Because a lot of them are actually, if I'm not mistaken, the cornstarch
right.
is put in, and I know...
That's right.
One of the Rabbanim that puts out in America the comprehensive major guide to Pesach cleaning, which is also the Machmir...
Oh, I know who, yeah.
...was Machpid on an annual basis to say that balloons are usher.
Yep.
Because they are lined with corn flour.
So as I said earlier, if you don't put it into your mouth, there is no issue. And these gloves are not put into our mouth. We don't eat the gloves. And even if we cook with them, as I mentioned, and they have real cornstarch on them, they're batel berov. Batel berov. So therefore, I never understood that one. I can tell you this Rav Beagle, who I learned a lot about kashrus from, got his whole family together on Erev Pesach and said, I'm putting you all on Neder al Dat Rabim, that has no Atara, no Ataras Nedarim, that you will not eat these gloves over Pesach. So, that's the issue with the gloves. So, the bottom line is, when you shop for Pesach, Baruch Hashem, there's so many things out there, there's no real issues that I can think of, except for fake kashrus and matzah. Fake kashrus, you have to check that it's a reliable kashrus, but matzah, that's the real McCoy. That's flour and water. So, if indeed you want to be machmir on something on Pesach, in my opinion, it should be what matzah you eat. Because that could be potentially chametz. That's the halacha. You can only make matzah out of something that could become chametz. But if it's macaroons, what's the worst that can happen? If it's the matzah meal, cake meal that they use, what's the worst that can happen? But if it's real matzah, flour, water, that's where the actual challenge begins. Therefore, I understand that people use hand matzah for shmura matzah at the Seder. They say you need a lishma, which means l'shem mitzvah matzah that you personally bake with your two hands. I'm very choshesh, on the other hand, for the Isser of chametz. And therefore, I use machine shmura matzah, somech on the fact that the person pushing the button says l'shem mitzvah matzah, because I've seen these machines. They're much less than 18 minutes, and in between them, they clean the machine. So there's no way that particles can get in. That's where I'm machmir, personally. I'm not machmir on the macaroons. I'm machmir on the matzah. The matzah is my biggest chashash on Pesach. But once you find the good kashrus, you should enjoy the matzah. You shouldn't be sitting at the Seder worry, oh my gosh, maybe it's chametz. Because if that's the way you're going to go through Pesach, you may be machmir on chametz and very mekel on v'samachta b'chagecha, which is as important a mitzvah as well. Not an isser, a mitzvah. So that's where I'm machmir. I'm not machmir on the other things that are out there.
I always get confused at the end of Pesach when Rav Rizkin or the Moitza Dati, whoever sells the chametz to our cousins here, how long do you have to wait to use your chametz motzi Pesach? It's automatic, or do you have to wait an hour, you have to wait 2 hours? I remember in America, you always had to wait for the rabbi to call back to the... Ever since I've been living 14 years, I tell my kids, wait at least an hour and a half, 2 hours to get your chametz.
So I'm going to explain. Minagam Yisrael is that when a new rabbi comes into town, he passes the Eruv and he passes the Shtar Mechirat Chametz of the former rabbi. That's the way he shows, you know, he has muscles. He's the new sheriff in town. So he doesn't passel Chas V'Shalom more sensitive things like the mikveh. He only passes the Eruv and he passes the Shtar Mechirat Chametz. That's the Minhag. From this perspective, there's many shittos how to sell chametz and how to buy back the chametz. There's two main shittos on this. The first shita is, like you said, in America, Motzei Yontif, the non-Jew came, you asked him, did you pay up? You didn't pay up? Okay. Do you want to now sell it back? Sell it back. And you do the sale, and that's the way it's done. That's the straightforward way that many do it, and therefore they say, wait a half an hour. Wait an hour till we can facilitate that sale. The second way of doing it is called Skifat Milve. Skifat Milve means that basically the chametz that you sold him is in lieu of payment, in a way. And therefore, he doesn't have to pay up right away. But if he doesn't take the chametz, per se, then on Motzei Yontif, it becomes hefker. And if it becomes hefker, if it's in your house, you're zoche in it. And that's the way it's done. You don't have to physically buy it back. So that's a more complicated thing to explain. But that's the second way of doing it. So I don't know what they do here today in Efrat. I'm assuming it's the second way if they never told us that you have to wait on Motzei Yontif. However, I would suggest that we all wait anyway because we have to put away our Pesach dishes before we can once again partake in Chametz. So therefore, some way or another, there is a wait there. And every rabbi that's buying back the Chametz will be careful enough to do it as soon as possible because Jews miss their Chametz. They want their pizza on Motzei Yontif. So they don't want to wait. So from this perspective, if they make a meeting with the non-Jew, it's going to be literally Motzei Yontif plus 10 minutes. That's when he's coming over. So those are the two ways of selling chametz. By the way, this year, Erev Pesach Shechal Yot B'Shabbat, there's also two ways of selling the chametz then, which is more complicated. But a rabbi that knows what he's doing should be able to use one of the shitas, and usually it's okay, simply because Mechiras chametz is probably only derabanan. Because midoraisa, we do bitul, as I mentioned, and that's good enough. The mechira is for the derabanan aspect of leaving it in the house, which doraisa is okay. Only midorabanan, you're not supposed to leave it in the house. So therefore, any of the two shitas should work with mechiras chametz. By the way, this year, I'm assuming no one's traveling, right? So there's no issue of my chametz is here, I'm going to be in America, right? Okay. More of an issue at the end of Pesach. If you see people celebrating a second day Yontif, be nice to them. They are going through a 3-day Yontif. We have to be sensitive to their needs. It's not easy. So let's try not to make fun of them. I know it's difficult for all of us. We all like to, say we made Aliyah. We don't need to do that. But for people that are in Israel this year, I want to say that, honestly, they're having a very hard time. They can't go home for Pesach because they probably won't be able to come back in. So if they're actually here, they're here. They're not going to be with their families. So if they do a second day Yontif this year, don't make fun of them. Encourage them. Do what we can. Any other year, we can, give it to them. You didn't make Aliyah. You're suffering. This is your punishment from God, etc., etc. Look, we're all in our cars. You're not. Not this year. This year, we'll be nice to them. I just saw in the Mirror Yeshiva, they told the guys who can't go home for Pesach to do Ataras Nedarim on all their Chumras, because they're not going home for Pesach. There's no way in the world they're going to keep all their Chumras if you're being hosted. So they're doing Ataras Nedarim on every Chumrah in the book and off the books. From Gebrachs all the way to I don't eat out on Pesach in other people's homes. I'll just say I don't think you need Ataras Nedarim because in Noda B'Yehuda Paskins, the Dagol Mervava on Simon Reish Yudalit, that if you're not doing Ataras Nedarim forever, you just want to not do it 1 year, you don't need Ataras Nedarim. You only need it if you're going to stop the minhag forever. You have a bad back, you don't want to stand up for Chazarat Hashatz till your back is better, you don't need Ataras Nedarim. If you want to stop the minhag totally, that's when you need Ataras Nedarim. But they want to do it, B'vakasha. So this year I said, the Chumrah, we see people doing second day Yontif, we're not making fun of them. It's hard for them to be here. They're without their families.
So, again, unless there are other questions, I'd like to thank the Rav on behalf of the people who are here, especially on behalf of the people who aren't here, because this will be disseminated, of course. And I'm going to stop recording now. What I am going to do...